Hello, everyone, and welcome to our live today. I'm going to be meeting up with one of my very best friends, Rebecca Achilles. She's a writer. She's a content creator. She has been in my life for about 5 years now. We've worked in the magazine industry together. She's been to my writing workshops. We've got so much to talk about. Yay, she's here.
Hi.
Oh, love the cardigan. I brought a cardigan too. I brought my yellow one.
I love that. We're so colourful.
We're always into our colours, and that's something I'm going to talk to Beck about.
I love your hair today.
Oh, thank you. I just always love the. I love it when someone inspires you to come back to your authenticity. I always remember when you wanted curls so badly, you went out and got a perm, and I was horrified because I was like, I've got these curls, why are you going to get them? But that's just an example of how you use your creativity all the time. And that's something I wanted to introduce as well, about the fact that you are a model and you've been in the modeling industry your whole life. And in a way, like when I met you, obviously so beautiful, you had a real Frida Kahlo look about you.
Thank you. And
I just loved the fact that you were using a lot of colour and you were sort of using yourself as a canvas artistically. And that was really, really inspiring for me, because at the time I was still straightening my hair.
I remember you saying all of these things like, yeah, I want to straighten my hair and I don't want to. You wanted to like dress in a certain way, but you knew that you wanted to dress a different way. And I was like, yeah, that was just like maybe something that I learned like just before you, but then you were learning it as you met me.
Yeah, we were going through a lot of transitions together. So you were teaching me some really, really important lessons just about being myself and honouring that divine feminine, which was beautiful. So we met at one of my creative writing workshops, which was so cool.
And my overalls, and I was so pregnant.
Yeah, pregnant with the twins. I knew as soon as I saw you we were going to be friends. There was just like that weird thing where you just see someone and you know that you're going to be friends for life. And yeah, we didn't then see each other for quite a few months. And what was it, 8 months?
Nine, I had 10. To like push the babies out and then I could like focus again.
And suddenly we both get a job at a magazine group at the very, very same time.
Right.
How did that feel for you? Because you'd opened up your copywriting business a couple of years before that. How did it feel to jump into magazines?
Yeah, so like I remember saying at the time, like that was my dream job in a way. I just wanted to write. The first time, like you realize that people will pay you for your art, all the things that you're creating, it's just like such a... It's such an amazing experience. So like when I'd been publishing on the internet for a while and I was like just amazed that these people were paying me as a nobody basically to write articles on their platforms. So I had that experience, and then when I got the job with the magazine, that was like the next, this is, I think I'm on the right path kind of experience. So it just felt like everything was lining up how it was meant to for me after like years of like not allowing myself to follow my creative pursuits, kind of like you.
So did you feel like, did you have that sensation like, I don't 100% know where I'm going, but I'm following a path and doors started to open up for you?
That's exactly right. Yeah. And unfortunately, like at the time, I've told you this before, but like that wasn't the right timing for me, just because I had like the boys at home that were only 6 or 7 months old. Like I look back at that time now and I see that I was just trying to escape from motherhood. You know, I was just trying to escape, and that's why I ran off to the job. I don't know how it all aligned so that I got it, but unfortunately, like it taught me lots, but it just wasn't the right time for me to be working. I had to be at home with the boys, you know.
And then once you did have a bit more time to yourself, that's when you started to put your own business together and things started to shift again. So tell me more about that. Tell me about what you, well, tell everybody, I know what you do, but tell everybody else what you do now.
And so I'm actually at a really interesting point where I've been a content creator now for a few years. And so that means I make videos for brands, basically, if you don't know what a content creator does. And within that, sometimes I'll do modeling jobs. I feel like that's the right path for me, but I've had moments like late last year, I was telling Rose, where I did feel like giving up and should I just go and get a normal job? And I don't know if this is what I'm meant to be doing. I got over all of that and now I'm at a point where I want to sort of take it to a new level. So I'm like really excited right now for where I'm going. And yeah, I feel like you're at the same sort of point, but you're a little bit ahead because you know your path is the right one for you. But I know you've had doubts like I have.
That's what always happens right before an up level, funny enough. Like we always, yeah, we always go through these like stuck times. I think it's particularly because we're always taking risks. Like we're the type of people that for some reason we feel driven for more. And there's that fine line between like, what is the ego and what is the heart? Like I'm always talking about this with my friends. I'm always talking about it with my heart writing students. You know, like, are we doing things from a place of ego? Like, is it about power or is it about, you know, is something else driving us, like a heart driven thing driving us? I just happen to know what I always wanted to do, like from a really, really young age, and seem to have stuck by it. But it's funny that teaching kind of pulled me into a different direction. I didn't actually ever realize I was going to go into teaching, but even when I was at the magazine group, I missed teaching. So I think what we have discovered is that we're multi-creatives. We don't have to be into a niche. And that's what you've done as well. You're still a writer, but you've got this, you've got the modeling background, you've got the video background, content creation background. So you've actually like put it all together now. And maybe that's why we have doubted ourselves, because we don't fit into a box.
Yeah. But I also think like, and I've been realizing this lately, you know, when you have an idea for a business and you want to start a business and it's like, why isn't it happening? And you're on the cusp of, I think I know the plan and I know what I want to do, but you haven't quite figured it out yet. And it's like, I'm also realizing that there's just like sort of divine timing for everything. And while I really wanted all these things in the last year or the last 2 years, it's only coming to fruition now. And I just think I didn't do anything wrong. You didn't do anything wrong. Nobody does anything wrong. It's just not your timing. And you just got to sort of like patiently wait and know that it's coming. But that's really hard to do.
Exactly. Yeah. And in the waiting, like we've had so many lessons come through to us as well. And we're always reading the same books. It's kind of weird. I mean, we obviously talk about the same books all the time. And I know I'm going to keep going back and forth a lot because we've got so much story to cover. But before we get into books and lessons and all that kind of thing, when I was much younger, I always felt very different from other girls around me. I know you felt that way too. And I always was like thinking, why am I so different? Why am I the only one in my group that likes reading and writing and being all artsy and weird? And before I moved over to Sydney, I went to a lot of therapy sessions. You know, I'm very public about that. And my heart writing students know that that is important to me in up-leveling, you know, like that I figure my shit out and have that clean slate in order to move where I need to go and face my fears. And I remember saying to this therapist, I just can't meet people like me. I just don't think that there are people like me around. And the therapist said to me, well, think about it, Rose, you exist. If you exist, of course there's going to be other people that think the same way as you. And about 2 years later, I met you. And I remember having that moment and thinking, oh, wow, that's super weird. But it was only when I really started to believe in myself that I started to truly attract those similar people. And I've kind of had that same philosophy with heart writing as well. Oh, I see what's possible now that I believe in myself, and I'm just going to keep attracting people like me. And that's what's happening. Like all my courses, I keep meeting a lot of people like me. I was so taken by your story about when you were at school and you were very creative from a young age as well. So tell me all about that. Tell me the scarf story.
Yeah. So when I was in high school, like year 10, year 11, I was starting to like adorn my hair and wear headpieces and scarves and earrings, you know, when I could and things like that to sort of express myself. my grandma has, like, so Yaya has all these vintage headscarves, like 50. And so she's got lots of cool things. And I just love the headscarf thing. I don't know why. I just love wearing them. And I love the colors. And so she gave me like 10 of them. And I used to wear them to school. And I remember like one of the first times I wore them to school, I was doing my hair in the mirror before school. And I took my hair, I took my scarf out and I put it back in. And then I was like, no, don't wear this. Like, it's too out there. And then I took it out, put it back in. I went off to school. And I remember at like lunch break, we're sitting around in a circle. And one of the girls that was sitting opposite me, she wasn't my best friend. She goes, you're very, what's the word? You're very vain, like that. And I was like, oh. And then my best friend that was sitting next to me started giggling. And I was just like, at the time, that was when I had just signed with an agency. So I was probably like 16 or 17 or something. And I didn't parade it around, but like my close friends knew. And that was when the nastiness sort of started in my group. And I remember thinking like, I'm going to just squish myself and not be, I don't want to be too, I don't want to be better than people. I don't want them to be jealous of me. This is obviously an issue. So that was when I first learned to like not talk about what I was sort of like into and don't wear things that look too good because then people get like pissed off and uncomfortable. Anyway, I just remember it being like a really horrible experience where I felt really embarrassed when she was saying, yeah, you're so vain. I was so thrown and I was just like, these aren't my people.
Yeah.
So that's when I first, yeah, I felt like, same as you, I don't understand why I'm different. And I used to like hide that I would read self-help books and things like that. Like I would read them in secret because I didn't want people to know that I'd read stuff like that. That's weird. Like who does that? You know, no one was doing those kind of things either. And that was when I felt the same sort of feelings as you, but I was about 16 or 17. And also the shrink yourself because no one wants you to be better than them sort of feelings that they all started. And I haven't really worked through them until I was like 30, to be honest, which is really sad. But we got there in the end anyway.
I think I was even older than 30, really, before I started to chip away at all this stuff. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, I just every time I think about that story, you know, like you were using one of your Yaya's beautiful scarves as a decoration and you loved your grandmother. You love your grandmother. Like, so of course you're going to be using her beautiful things and expressing yourself. And then you just get fucked for it basically, you know, like your friends treating you like that. It's
awful. But I didn't at the time, because I was so young, I didn't think in my brain, it's okay, Beth, they're jealous, you know, like I just didn't understand it and I just wanted to be like accepted and like I wanted them to be my friends and I didn't want to rock the boat. So yeah, I mean, and then when I met you, I remember, do you remember after the class, I was like, I just really loved you. And I just felt like I really liked this girl. And I remember you at the end of the class, I was like such a content creator. I'm like, I'm going to take a photo of you with your little, you had a little stand with your crystals and some, I think tarot cards and some books on the table. And yeah, I just wanted to take a photo for you because I knew, I think it was your first workshop or it was the first kind of workshop that you were doing, so it was like a big deal for you. And and you were like, no, I know you don't need to take my photo. And I'm so glad I did, because like we still have those photos now, however many years on, from that day. And it was just a special day.
How funny that memory. Yeah, I was shrinking myself. I was in and out of still shrinking myself. For me, it's like recognition of how far I've come, because I really struggled with being photographed randomly. And now I'm having to do photo shoots for my business and I'm having to really like step up and show myself and talk on camera all the time and conduct my classes online on camera all the time and just be okay with looking at my reflection and not being so self-critical.
Self-conscious.
Yeah. And so my friendship with you has been so symbolic, because I remember being a girl that was intimidated by beautiful girls. I was never bitchy like those friends of yours, but I remember that feeling of like, oh, I can never be as pretty as that, and you're having those thoughts. But for some reason, my friendship with you has been so the opposite. I witness your beauty and I see the beauty reflected back in me. Like, that's really lovely. And it's partly your grace, and it's also partly like I've done some work on myself that I can actually just be in the presence of uplifting, strong, beautiful women now and not feel intimidated, but actually, like, it's giving me a purpose now to step up. I hope that this translates as well to my writers, because I'm in this position now where I'm helping writers to really step up and own their authentic voice, like own who they are, and stop shrinking because you're worried about what to write. Like, you're worried that someone's going to be angry at you because you wrote a really honest story. So that takes me to us when we got the job at the magazine, and suddenly we were getting all of our writing published and all these like we were writing personal things in these stories, and really personal. And you were writing some really beautiful personal stories about raising the boys because you were being published in Mindful Parenting magazine. First of all, I just wanted to say I have always been a huge fan of your writing and huge fan of your voice. I teach that a lot in my workshops, as you know, to produce an authentic voice that's kind of like shameless. Like, I don't give a fuck what you guys think of me. I'm just going to tell you how it is. And you do that so, so beautifully. And you refused to shrink. You refused to adapt to a style. And that was why you were so successful at the magazine. So authentic. So tell me a little bit about how that felt to write.
I think why you're so good at what you do is that, like, you tell people that they have permission to write how they feel. I remember you counseling me a few times on that when I was feeling a bit like vulnerable by putting myself out there, you know, and you would always encourage me in the most beautiful way that, like, I could write, and, you know, what I had to say was okay to say. And I really feel like if I didn't have your encouragement there, then, I mean, I don't know if I would have published what I had published. So I don't think you realize, like, yeah, just how much you help people to stand in their own light because you do that yourself, but also you just genuinely, like, want to encourage people. So yeah, I just remember that was a really hard time for me when I was at the magazine because I wasn't sleeping and things, so I didn't feel well. But I mean, seeing my words come out on paper and print, I still have the magazines because it was just obviously it's such a cool thing when you make something and you see it published. It's just like, wow.
Yeah, it was such a special time. Like, I think we were just like, oh my god, like, I can't believe this, you know, this is happening. fangirling on, like, oh wow, you know. And maybe a couple of years before we wouldn't have guessed that would even happen. I didn't even know where I wanted to go. All I knew was I'd just finished my master's in creative writing, and I was like, "What next? I finished this now. What's possible after this?" And that phrase actually keeps kind of following me. Like, so what else is possible? You've reached this now. What else is possible?
We're given, like, little stepping stones too. Like, you're never given the full puzzle. You're just given, like, little glimpses and little pieces, and that, like, us both working in that position was just a stepping stone for our next part of, like, what we were supposed to do. Like, you've gone on to open your business. It helped you hone in on what do I really want to do. And now you've beautifully blended, like, teaching with writing. Like, it's just it's perfect. It's like you had to work there and have those experiences to then be able to move on to the next one. And same with me, I had to just know that now's not the time for me to be doing my personal projects. I need to be at home with the boys and, you know, I need to overcome the depression. I need to sleep better and then I can start again, you know?
Yeah, self-care is such a big part of it, isn't it? Like, if we're not honouring what we need first, it's not going to work anyway. Yeah, you go.
No, I was just going to say, like, and also a lot of what you teach is be quiet and sit down and listen for a minute. And I never did that. And that's why I always couldn't, I just was on the cusp of like what I wanted to do, but I couldn't work it out. And just recently now I've returned to journaling and that kind of stuff and guided meditations, just being really quiet and still and that kind of stuff at times, right? It makes my eyes roll and I just feel like, oh, fucking meditating. I don't, yet to shut up, like, and I'm not in the mood for that right now, and I don't want to do those wankery things.
Yeah,
but really they're the most important things to do. And now with my like rebrand that's coming to fruition, I've only been able to work out everything and have the ideas I have, I think, because I'm sitting and taking the time to listen, journal. I don't know, it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's such a ride. Like naturally, like I really have to work at this. Like, you know that I've got this really loud part of myself, and I think some people might think, you know, if they meet me when I'm really loud, they don't realize I've got this really like super quiet, soft side. You know, like you said, just shut up and listen to yourself. Because I'm a few years older than you, I probably see myself in you, and I know that I used to just keep going, particularly when I was in my teaching career. That's when I was definitely in my ego in my teaching career. It was always about what's the next thing that I can achieve, but never actually stopped to question, what do I really want? And I stumbled upon, you know, yoga about 26, 27. I started to get really deep into yoga, but it wasn't really until I was about 31, 32, maybe when I started seriously traveling, that I started to have a lot of time to myself. Like I remember being on bus rides, like 12-hour bus rides, nothing to do, no internet. And I actually think that's when I really started to meditate. And I'll just go into these zones, and that's when I heard voices, you know, like really started to hear like spirit talking to me. And it does feel a bit weird even saying that now, like spirit's talking to me, but there is something that happened.
Yeah,
it's very
absolutely
weird.
And actually, you know, there was an article you wrote on the Substack, and it was like it might have been called following my true compass or something. Yeah, like that. And compass, you were writing, yeah, about being on a bus going to your next place and just having like all these ideas, and you got your journal out and you basically had the crux of your first novel and you were writing it down and it just came to you. And I remember relating to that and being like, that's what it feels like when you have these ideas that want to come out of you, but you do finally give yourself the time to sit and listen, yeah, and journaling, yeah, out. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like this year has been really, really important for me for that whole slowing down. Like last year was a masculine year in the sense of like energetically I was in a really masculine phase, and I think we all go through those phases and seasons. But I'd come into heart writing in a soft way, but last year I realised that I had a lot of things that I had to do to build my business to the next level so that I could then soften into what I can do. And it's worked because I feel myself now softening, you know. But I look back on last year and think, you know, Rose, you weren't as connected as you could have been last year, actually. And now I can see why. Well, I can see why I've been so stressed. And now I know, okay, I need to just quiet down now and just start to listen. So the last few weeks in particular, I've just been in this real like soft, like super feminine kind of place, not forcing anything, not chasing anything, just writing really, and just getting back to my students. And on my free time, I've just been doing a lot of laying around weirdly, and meditating.
But that's also because you had to do all the hard work to set up the foundations of your business, and you needed the masculine energy to be able to get those things done, you know, like
Exactly. I don't tend to be a person that regrets a lot, actually. Like, I can always see, oh, there was a purpose for all that. So, okay, let's push on. And it's that whole anything's possible now. Like, if I've done that, like, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? So I love having a friend like you, because you're just so inspiring in that way, because you're always like, what else is possible? And that's that whole idea of surrounding yourself with, what do they say? You know, you're most like the five people that you surround yourself with. Now there was so many other things I wanted to talk to you about, and I said that I would finish this. This always happens every time we get together. This is me and Beck 3 hours later. Oh god. But I'm so glad that you didn't listen into those girls that said that you're very vain, because something in you, I think spirit really kept guiding you to your mission and your path, because you were so the opposite of vain, and you were so the opposite of superficial and fake. You were one of the most real people I've ever met. So please never, ever let yourself shrink down. Like, be that light for all of us.
Thank you.
But I can see clearly like why me and you have, we've had our ups and downs with depression. We both read Lost Connections last year, if anyone's read that book. Institutions have financial gain, right, by our mental instability. But it's kind of connections that bring us back.
I was medicated so fast when I went in there saying, like, this is how I'm feeling. But at the same time, I had two babies who weren't sleeping. The doctor knew that. Obviously could see I was depressed. So I understand she was like putting the medication in place to like protect everyone and protect me. And it did serve its purpose and got me through that really shit time. But like later, I can see how you would fall into the trap of, I just felt very scared to be able to come off them and be okay. And reading that book really helped me. And also the other one, I'm not sure if you've read the Happiness Trap.
I actually haven't read it yet.
By Dr. Russ Harris. And that book was so good for me because it gave you like actual practical strategies for, okay, if I'm feeling a negative story replaying in my mind, here's all the different things that I can do to try and take the edge off it being like me listening to it, and like how you can take your mind less seriously. Mm-hmm. And, it's just, the book is full. It's like having a psychologist in your pocket. So I feel like those two books are really why I was able to sort of like come off the medication and stay off and be okay. But also, like I said to you, I had a situational experience that was making me feel like that. Yeah. And some people, they have trauma, and it's not as simple as it being a 6-month situational thing, and then they feel better, like I was, you know what I mean?
So yeah,
I
think totally.
For some people, medication is like just so important for them to be able to function normally. And therefore, why would you fuck with that? Just stay on it if it makes you feel good day to day, because that's the most important thing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've never been too extremist with anything, with spirituality, even with the medical industry, with education. Like, I just don't like the idea of being too extreme on either end. Like, just get as much information as you can, and also no regrets, right? Like, you had to take that medication and it really served its purpose. And I at one point I was very close to taking antidepressants too. I just happened to just get myself out of it with a therapist at the time, and I was lucky, but I was always open to it because my dad has needed medication to get him through his major depression, and that's really saved his life, like multiple occasions has saved his life, as a lot of people know. So what seems to be missing in our society at the moment is like that whole tribe thing, you know, like keeping us connected, keeping us supported with the right people. Amanda, one of my students, said that she also loves The Happiness Trap.
Oh, yes.
She's read it as well.
I've got it like beautiful. Or tag marked on all the important pages, like for all the strategies that I felt like were so helpful to me. I've like dog-eared or whatever you call it, the pages. And it's just like, yeah, I've read it so many times.
Creatives are definitely more susceptible to depression, I think. It's just because creatives tend to be different and think outside the box. And especially we're in a society that is a very capitalist-driven society, and there seems to be less value on creative acts in terms of making money. So creatives kind of feel purposeless, which is such a shame.
And also the fact that it's like you're vulnerable because you're making something or you're sharing something, and that can lead to anxiety if you're not in the right headspace to be open and vulnerable. And then you feel like, no, I don't want to feel these feelings, so I'm going to stop sharing. You know, I'm sure everyone can relate to that when you've had moments of making something and sharing it. And I still do that with even just my Instagram posts sometimes. I'll edit what I'm saying and like re-edit it. And then I just think, put your phone down. It's obviously not the time to share this, and come back to it another day, you know, because you're obviously like just not in the right headspace to complete it and be you. Like, I don't want to show up on Instagram and post shit when it's not authentic, or I'm just posting for the sake of it so I can get something out there, you know, like I hate that.
What place is it actually coming from? Is it coming from an authentic place? But the fact is you're still sharing it. I mean, that's part of the artistic process, you know, editing, crafting, manipulating, like every artist goes through that. So I guess in a sense, you're just waiting until you've crafted something. It's not just a post for you. It's a part of your brand, and being creative is a huge part of your brand.
I'm so glad I have you to some, like, to send things to every now and then too, and be like, can you just glance over this? Because I just really trust your opinion too. And I just feel I have a lot to learn from you, and I love that I can sort of call on someone to even ask, because a lot of the time in the past I haven't had anyone, and I've just been sort of fumbling around on my own. Or it's just nice to have someone like-minded to bounce ideas off to. And the world is such a big place now with the internet, and like if you don't have a friend in real life who you can sort of like have these talks with and bounce ideas off, there's groups and there's Facebook, you know, Facebook pages, and there are so many people you can connect with online now. So it shouldn't be a reason that stops you from achieving what you want to achieve, basically.
Yeah, that's right. Like, why do artists think that they have to do this solo? You know, so they just end up in this room on their own, nobody to bounce off. We're not meant to be that way. Like, I really disagree with the idea of just sending the artist out there on their own. And Cherie just messaged and said, yes, it was so hard to sell my first piece and put myself out there at markets. Yeah, I mean, and that, oh, I feel for you, Cherie. Like, you did it though. You did it. You put it out there, and then you start getting better and better at just owning that. Like, yeah, I've created something beautiful, or, you know, like for a writer, I've written a piece. Not everyone might like what I've written or agree with my opinion or like my style, but fuck it. I wrote this and I love this and I believe in this and I crafted this, and nothing's ever going to be perfect. But if I don't put it out there, it's no one's ever going to see it. And that's the biggest problem.
That reminds me of it's a podcast or YouTube episode. Andrew Huberman and Rick Rubin.
Rick Rubin.
They're talking about how the creative process, and basically one of the questions that someone asked Rick Rubin was, how do you know whether what you're creating is worth it? Like, how do you know if it's worth it? And I remember listening to this part and being like, yeah, like, how do I know? Because at the time I was thinking exactly the same. And anyway, Rick just goes, no, worth it means that you are thinking about the outcome. You're focused on the outcome and the end result. And that's not the right way to think when it comes to something that you're creating. You should be creating it for you. Think of it as like a personal journal entry that you're writing that no one's going to see unless you choose for them to see. you're creating something that is the perfect representation of what you wanted it to be, because you've taken the pressure off. How am I going to sell it? How much is it worth? Like, who's going to buy it? That was such a aha moment for me, where I've just gone, yeah, next time when I'm making something, or like with my brand is an expression of me. And I just trust that the people that resonate with me and my style will come, you know what I mean? Rather than watering down my branding to be like safe for everybody and appeal to everybody, and then just having all these clients that you don't want, that you don't really like resonate with, come to you.
Yeah, this is the sad beige branding that Gemini Creative posted about yesterday. She's like, have you seen the sad beige branding trend? And I know I sent it to you because I thought it was so funny, because yeah, why does everyone have to look the same? Why does everyone have to do everything the same? Oh, and, you know, your business won't be successful unless you fit into this neat box and do everything exactly the same, produce everything the same, and do market research to show that it fits into that box. But, you know, it was really interesting because Amanda Francis, who wrote Rich as Fuck, which I know you love that book as well, she said, I never do market research. I never survey my clients. I never survey my clients to find out what they need or want, because how do they know what they want until I show them what is possible? Until I show them what my gifts are and how I can help them, people don't actually know what they want. So don't create a brand that's like cookie cutter like everybody else's. And I remember back when I started heart writing, I got a lot of not negativity, but sort of like careful, cautious kind of comments like, oh, you know, are you sure there's going to be enough people that will want to enroll in that course? And I kept that therapist's words in my head, but you exist, Rose, but you exist. There's got to be other people out there that want the same sort of things and love the same sort of things as you. Which in a way is kind of making it sound like I'm looking for everybody exactly like me, which is not exactly what I mean.
No, but you just mean like believe you're going to attract, you know, the people that are meant to find you and that want to do your work and that fit you beautifully.
Yeah, like if I wasn't authentic and if I didn't offer what I believed was my true gifts, then how was anyone ever going to find it? I had to just go out there and do it. And yeah, man, it's been a lot of self-belief, but yeah, it's working.
I don't know if you've been listening to Amanda's meditations as well. I just feel it helps me like stay motivated and confident. I would say like confident in what I'm doing and what I'm building. It's okay if other people comment on, oh, you know, that's not going to, some people will really not like that. It's just like, I'll have the confidence to be like, that's okay if they don't like it, because it's me. I'm not going to change what style I am or what I really want to do just because I'm worried that, yeah, other people won't like it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like I had no one really to compare to when I started heart writing, except for, you know, the only writing workshops out there were hosted by writers that were just wearing like plain shirts or like pinstripe shirts and glasses, you know, like really fitting this stereotype. And I'm like, well, I don't like pinstripes and I don't need glasses and I've got this like wild hair and I do yoga and I talk about spiritual stuff and I swear a lot, you know, like I just don't fit any of these boxes. But oh well, let's just give this a go.
I remember you writing about that too, and yeah, it just really resonated. And I think a lot of people could relate to that too.
I think so. Like there's always a home. There's a home for everybody. I've got a quote written down from Amanda Francis from the book. At the moment there's a whole trend about like you've got to have a victim story. Like it's got to be like, you know, rags to riches, or like you've been through massive hardships and that's the only way that you can get successful. But she said, a victim story is not required to create a success story. She said that horrible things, yes, gave me new things to overcome, but you get to grow and go to your next level just because you decide to. No struggle required. We all think that, right? Like, oh, it's got to be like this massive struggle to get to our next place. So, you know, with our businesses, you know, with my writers who are like, oh my God, I've got to write a book. It's going to be such a struggle. But what if it doesn't have to be? What if it,
yeah.
What if like all of this is gold if you just believe in your magic and your purpose? So, yeah, I really love that. And I really love that the Rick Rubin just doing things because, like just being in the flow state, doing it because. And like I refuse now to work with writers that are only out there for the outcome. That is not what we do at all here. It is about like the love of what you do, and then then eventually maybe that love of what you do transforms into like utter magic. That's what I want people to
do. Aggressive, having that like specific pinpointed goal, and I've done that so many times that my vision board will be like always specific goals, and then I sort of learned to focus on the feelings of what I want to achieve instead, or just being open to receiving what's coming that's meant for you, and not being too tied up with it's got to be $100,000 book deal, you know, like
it's
limitless, like what you can sort of create if you're open and you're accepting to receive. But I that did take me a long time to sort of like get.
But you embody, like I feel like you as a person, you really embody this sense of empowerment, and that's just going to guide you in the right direction anyway.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm so glad to hear that too, because, I feel like it was such a struggle for a long time and I had to do a lot of work to like get here.
What would you say then is what's your biggest advice to creatives who are just feeling unmotivated and stuck, and what's the point?
I mean, I think part of it is like, is it your time? Because I was like, I feel like I was forcing stuff to happen and willing it to happen like at the wrong time, like when I was at home with the boys and they were like 8 months old and I couldn't tell I needed to just be at home for like a good 2 years and not be pursuing my creative projects. But I mean, the only other reasons that I can think of where you're feeling stuck or unmotivated or things aren't sort of coming into fruition is you're doing things for the outcome instead of just acting from your own intuition and like listening to your heart. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm just sort of thinking like patience as well. Like it's a fine line, isn't it? Because you don't want to block yourself by being too patient and just like not doing anything. So action has to be part of it. But I think I really like that about maybe it's not your time, but it doesn't mean it's never going to be your time.
I think as well, like what I noticed is I kept making the same mistakes where I was I had an idea that I wanted to do things in my business, right? And I wanted to make something. I wanted to make a brand. And I kept allowing other people to distract me. And what I mean is I would like someone is always asking me to do something with them or for them, or can you help me launch this, or can you come on and help me do this for me? Even if it doesn't seem like it's a big use, a big take of your time, right? Like maybe it's something that's like once a week that you're going to commit to. It's just the energy of you're distracted and you are then focusing on the other person. Mm-hmm. And so I think actually that was another big thing for me, being a bit stuck and unmotivated and not getting what I wanted done, was because I was committed to other people and I had to say, I can't help you right now because there's so many things that I want to do that I need to do.
Yeah, exactly. Giving yourself the space. And I guess this is a huge problem for parents, right? Like you're a busy mum of twins, toddlers. It's huge when you haven't got a lot of free time.
Yeah. But, you know, with that, you're either a night owl, I feel, or you're a morning person. And you just lean into which one are you? And then, like, for me, I'm a morning person. So, you know, I get up at 4:45, 5 a.m. and I'll have my coffee. The boys will be asleep for a good 30 minutes to another hour. And that's when I do my my work. Mm. And if I don't have any work to do, I'm just journaling or I'm making gratitude lists or reading some books and just doing my weird shit that I love to do. But I do it in the morning. And I've spoken to some mum friends about that. And they're like, oh, couldn't think of anything worse than doing that. I do it at night. I love my nighttime peace when the kids are in bed. You can still find the time. I know that's so annoying when someone says that to you.
Yeah.
It's just being more strategic with like what you're doing in the day, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And that strategy also, is it loving? Is it kind to yourself? Like, is it something that your soul is yearning for as well? And I think we often forget that, you know, like, what do we really want? I mean, that brings us back to like the start of the conversation. Like, if we sit and listen, actually give ourselves that time, like, well, what do we really want? But we tend to always say, don't have the time. It's not a priority right now. But if you really sit and listen, we'll know. Like, and then that's when things, the magical things, tend to actually get done a lot faster.
Yeah.
But just not, who cares what people think? It's not about getting it done for other people and what they think. Like, your soul will eventually tell you when to do it.
And I also just wanted to say too, because I know like some mums will probably be like listening to that and scoffing and sort of thinking, yeah, I just don't have the time. And it's like, well, that's selfish. And I think maybe you'll get to a point where you feel so bad that you'll realize that you just have to put yourself first and be selfish. Mm-hmm. Because I've felt so bad that I had to think, oh, what can I do? Putting yourself first and carving out that time, demanding that time when you're a mom and you're trying to run a business. It's just, it feels selfish, but if you're not going to do it, no one's going to do it for you. And when it gets bad enough, you'll realize that you just have to do that.
Oh, you couldn't have said it any better. So beautiful to talk to you. I think we've covered everything, haven't we?
I'm so glad we finally did that.
That was really fun. And so, like, for me, I've had people ask me to do these type of collaboration videos and sometimes they just don't feel right. And I'm always about following my heart. Like, if it feels good, go for it. What does my heart say? Yes, no. And when we talked about this only a few days ago, I was just like, yeah, this is a yes. This is an absolute yes. We need to do this. All my favorite topics wrapped up in one. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for everyone that watched. We actually had more people watching than I thought, which is awesome. So thank you all for joining us. Thanks, Beck. And you can go check Beck out at That Achilles Girl. Get some awesome content creation done if you're in the Sydney area or if you want to work with her online. So thank you so much, Beck. I will talk to you so soon.